This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lois and Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking whole train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scrappy Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. Back inside the mothership, of course, alongside me as always, my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Good afternoon or good morning, whatever the case may be. Welcome to episode 433 of the Gold Standard. You know what, JR? One inconceivable fact at this moment in time.
What that?
It is fucking cold out.
It was cold. It was really cold. I knew it was going to be cold, but I feel like it hasn't been this cold yet. So when I went into work this morning, it like completely caught me off guard. I was like, oh my God, nose is freezing, nose hairs are freezing, everything just iced up.
Like mustache frozen.
God, everything.
Facial hair stiff. It's like, oh, good grief.
Yeah, it was a shit.
But then I've heard that like Thursday or Friday, it's supposed to be like, I don't know, up here, like 62 or something.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like in the 50s tomorrow already with the rain and stuff. So hopefully so
that's the problem. Snow doesn't bother me. What bothers me is three things. One of them you should be very familiar with. The fact that the temperature has stayed in the 20s. Usually after snowstorms, at least historically the last few years here in New England, usually like the next couple of days it's in like the upper 30s. So at least it's above freezing and then the sun's out. So during the day stuff will melt and then it won't be that cold at night to where it evaporates. And number two, people can't fucking drive. I was driving home from work on Saturday and I was making sure you were okay, of course. I know you went to the PC game. Tough loss there. You had said you almost got into a friggin' fender bender. The highway was a mess. But of course, what's in the middle lane? I'm on the right lane behind a truck, just making sure I don't swerve. I don't, weave. Some Escalade is barreling in the middle lane thinking, well, I got a fucking Escalade. Meanwhile, you know what he does? He goes up a hill right before one of the exits, in Fairfield County. Lower part of Connecticut, and he swerves and he hits the guardrail. I pretty much honked and gave him the finger. And I normally don't do that, but I'm like, fuck you.
It's an Escalade.
No, it's Escapade, Janet.
No, I think it's Escalade.
I thought it was Escalade. Eh, whatever.
Escalade.
Fucking asshole still got hit, so I don't care. You can call it whatever the fuck he wants. But
it was, it was harrowing. I was on a back road, and some guy just decided to run a stop sign for no reason. Like, he didn't even skid. He just went, and he whacked another truck coming across the intersection, like, right in front of me. That would have been me if I was going.
Holy shit.
And that was like 3 minutes to the ride. So I'm like, oh, here we go. But it ended up being it wasn't too bad, actually. It wasn't too bad. But also not too bad is our special guest here tonight, Scott.
Yes.
He is the winner.
Yes. Well, we're just saying we're venturing out of the garden tonight.
Yes.
We're going on a little road trip, JR, across the LIR, and we're bringing a guest with us.
We are, and he is the winner of last year's Halloween Trivia Contest, and as part of his prize, you get to choose any podcast episode to come on. He originally picked a 2007 pay-per-view, but that died in the vine immediately after he chose it. So we will welcome him in here tonight to talk about our show tonight, and that is Mr. Ryan Everett, a veteran of the Place to Be family. Ryan, how are you?
Hello. Yes, I'm cashing in my trivia contest briefcase, and glad to be here.
Of course, it was great to meet Ryan this past year in Brooklyn. How's your wife, sir?
Good.
It's nice to meet her as well. Added a little cred to the group, at least one female in the crew. And Rotella.
Yes, well, Rotella was harrowing on her like mold, but in the one picture. But it's like, oh, there's his wife. And who's that weird thing by? That's not her husband. Yeah, I know it's not. Never mind. But don't worry about him. He's harmless. He's like a cockroach. But it was good to see you in the 99-degree Rathskeller there. We were drinking some nice Schafferhofer, and it was a good time. And, so this evening, Ryan, you, JR, and myself, JR and I are venturing out of our MSG plush offices, sir. We're going down – actually, we're going downstairs to Penn Station. We're going out to D'Amato's house. He's, you know, we're going to crash there, watch some midget porn, and it's going to be great. But tonight we're going to go out to Nassau Coliseum, my friend, and a new concept, JR. We've already done a pay-per-view or a closed-circuit special. We've done our house shows, but on this evening, something we haven't seen the WWF do in years, JR, and what is that?
We are airing on NBC, brand new partnership. I was going to say primetime, but it's not quite primetime. It's late.
Not quite.
Late.
It's actually the not ready for primetime players slot.
Yes.
So
it is. And that's Saturday's main event.
Yes, it is. A new concept put together by Mr. McMahon and Mr. Ebersol.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to give the Saturday Night Live crew, who at the time was kind of in a state of flux in the mid-80s, gone were the days of Chevy and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, and we haven't quite gotten to the Kevin Nealon, Dennis Miller, Dana Carvey crew yet. So this was kind of – they wanted to give SNL a month off to kind of let their creative juices flow. So Dick Ebersol decided WrestleMania was hot.
Mm-hmm.
MTV specials were hot. It's 11:30 on a Saturday. Yeah, big ratings. So 11:30 on a Saturday, why not? So, and they called the concept Saturday Night's Main Event.
Mm-hmm. And they were unique, too, because they would feature matches between the top names, not the squashes we usually see on TV. So they're built up as almost like mini pay-per-views, I guess. Loaded shows where angles would progress. We'd get a squash here or there, but it'd always be big-time matches and big-time moments to help progress a lot of storylines.
Good,
Ryan.
No, I was just saying we sure have one squash at the end of the show tonight.
Oh, for sure. Yes, we did.
Yeah, no, tonight was a squash. Although they picked a good jobber, and they added, you know, because there was a hook to this episode, and as JR and I will document over the first, maybe three or four Saturday Night's Main Events, they usually have a theme.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight, of course, the theme, because it is, why don't we go into the date and dive in?
Let's go.
May 11th, 1985. It was taped the night before, live from the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Uniondale, New York, Long Island. Your attendance was a pretty good one. My screen just wonked. What was the attendance there, JR? Do you have it in front of you?
8,300.
Seemed a little low, didn't it? It's a seat 18,000-19,000. That was a little low. Yeah. I would expect a little bit more. Your announcers are Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who we hadn't seen yet, JR, in our according to Sutton, we did. What we saw is Toupee. But we really haven't seen him on camera since our reboot. So we're seeing him for the first time here. And Jesse the Body Ventura, who, of course, we saw only at WrestleMania 1. He hasn't done any of the house shows yet. And you could tell he was a little nervous because even the we knew he was nervous at WrestleMania. But even here, you know, network television, when he was doing the open with Vince, he was a little nervous. But there's your skinny. Give us the Sun report.
Not
there,
skinny. Jerry. Okay. Hulk Hogan is our WWF champion.
I wasn't going there, but yes.
473 days into his reign. Greg the Hammer Valentine, 228 days into his reign as Intercontinental Champion, the Foreign Legion in Sutton terms,
right.
Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, 40 days into their reign as tag champs, as is Wendy Richter, 40 days into her reign as Women's Champion. Scott, there was also two other shows actually held on this day, one in Fukuoka, Japan on 5/10. Antonio Inoki and Tatsumi Fujinami defeated Andre the Giant and Jimmy Snuka in the main event. And in Pittsburgh on this day, Tito Santana defeated Greg Valentine in a non-title taped fist match. So,
nice.
Also featured Winona Little Heart defeating Donna Christianello.
Winona Little Heart?
Yeah, in a battle for your love right there.
For battle for my love, yes. So in my my double wide.
That's what was going on that day. And also, like we mentioned, the first, I mean, I get prime time in quotes, but wrestling to first to air, wrestling programs were nationally in prime time since 1955. So it's been quite a long time. Ryan, really just briefly, I won't say do a full introduction, but it's, you know, let us know your age and kind of when you became a wrestling fan to help kind of frame the discussion.
All right. Well, I'm at this point, I wasn't born, so. I'm turning 31 this week. So, and I became a fan like late 90, early 91. I think WrestleMania 7 is the first pay-per-view I watched, and like when I really started becoming a like a real watch it every week, go to Blockbuster, rent a video every weekend, start buying the wrestling figures and stuff, like really die hard. And pretty much have been for 25 years now, I guess.
All right. Very good.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Okay. I'm probably the only one in this group that actually watched the show live. Probably me and D'Amato are probably the only two. I was pumped. I was excited. Because, I mean, at the time, we were just watching, you know, the Cindies on the weekends. I had my Superstars at 11 o'clock every Saturday morning on Channel 20, which was the one of the local Connecticut channels, WTXX, and primetime, of course, on Monday nights. And then when was All-American?
Sunday like noon.
Sunday at noon, yeah. I think it was. Yeah, Sundays at noon was All-American. And I didn't get Challenge. Or maybe Challenge hadn't started yet. I don't think Challenge started yet. So I had my fix.
It was 86.
Okay, so it hadn't started yet. All right. So, and then, of course, I got my, you know, my other wrestling, AWA was on ESPN during the week, and then, you know, Crockett was on Saturday nights. But to be on network television, and it's Saturday night, we could stay up late, I mean, it was pretty awesome. So I remember my buddy and I that lived up the street from me, we used to alternate who would stay over. Like, he would stay over my house, and I'd stay over his house. And it was – so we were – I remember being a big deal like in school and, oh, my God, it's on like real TV. You know, it was pretty awesome. I remember being pretty pumped for it.
All right. Very good.
So there we go.
We dive in.
All right. I don't think – were there any dark – did they wrestle any early matches? I don't
There were dark matches, actually.
Okay.
Let's see here.
What do we got here?
We have Salvatore Bellomo.
Pinned
Johnny Rods. Les Thornton pinned Rick McGraw. Big John Studd defeated Tony Garea. Jose Luis Rivera defeated Charlie Fulton. And Moondog Spot knocked off Steve Lombardi.
Was Spotty a babyface?
I'm thinking whatever it was. It was.
Because I'm thinking it was, I don't know, Lombardi must have turned heel by then. Yeah, because
I think it was just a guy beating a jobber. I wouldn't put that much thought into it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, so let's get into our opener, which is a 6-man tag, JR, which continues. And let me tell you something, as we saw.
Actually, you know what, before you get to that, I did have a couple of notes just on the show in general I wanted to talk about.
Sure.
I thought it was good exposure, and I thought it was really smart to strike while the iron was hot from like a mainstream point of view. So I thought Ebersol going to them and them jumping at it made a lot of sense right now. I also thought it was interesting that Vince handled the duties himself. Like, he had Gorilla do WrestleMania, but I feel like he was so hands-on with the Ebersol and the NBC relationship that he felt like he kind of had to do this show. So I thought that was interesting. I wasn't sure if there was something behind it, like if Ebersol requested him or if he decided that he had it to be the voice of the show, but I thought that was interesting. Jesse, clearly the number one color commentator now, getting this role. and I thought the video quality of presentation was top class. It looked great. You could tell how the slick presentation they put together for NBC. And I like that they opened the show with the various competitors and the promos. And again, I thought it was smart to use the celebrities here as well. So we'll talk about them as we go. But it was smart to almost do like a mini WrestleMania is what they did.
Right. And again, if you watched on the network, they put in that that Saturday Night's Main Event open, that music, which they would use eventually. But I believe the first – I think we looked this up. The first two or three Saturday Night's Main Events, maybe into mid-'86. I might be wrong. Maybe it's earlier. But I know at least the ones this year – they used, of course, a song you hear quite often here on PlaceToBeNation.com, Animotion's Obsession, thus the theme, of course, for my podcast, PlaceToBeNation's Main Event, thus the reason I use it. And the outro, the credits, they used to use, I don't know how this one went further down, but they used to use Take Me Home by Phil Collins. Take me home, because I don't remember. They used that for a lot. That was back when Vince didn't care about throwing out some dime, some scratch for the music, but then, you know. This Jim Johnston guy came along and made everything nice and cheap and easy. So, creatively, it just, I mean, I love the open. I always wanted the minute that Hogan and Mr. T, and they never sold them, even on the in the catalogs, they never sold those black Saturday Night's Main Event t-shirts. Mm. Never sold them. Ah, killer. They did them on shop.com like a few years ago, but it was like that newer look that they had like in 06
right.
and 07. They didn't do like the original logo, which I thought would have been awesome. But speaking of Mr. T, we're going to get into him in a few minutes because there's something about this show I really liked. But first off, JR, let's talk about this six-man tag. Again, a tag team feud that continues to percolate. And we talked about it on the last house show, how these two teams, red hot, and it continues here.
Yeah, the U.S. Express, the former champions, teaming up with Ricky Steamboat against Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, and George Steele, who, Scott, we haven't talked about yet, so why don't you just really briefly give his bio. Born April of 1937 in the room next to you. Grew up in Madison Heights, Michigan. Athletic in high school, playing football, baseball, basketball, and running track. Played football in the 50s for Michigan State before knee problems caused his football career to end. Got his bachelor's degree from Michigan State and later a master's from Central Michigan, where he played under Keno Davis. Before he began teaching his teaching career back in Madison Heights while teaching, also served as football and amateur wrestling coach. While looking to add some additional income to his salary, Meyer started wrestling in Detroit, wanted to conceal his identity to protect his privacy, so began wrestling under a mask going by the name The Student. You think he would have picked something that wasn't like tied to his job? You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
I'm a lawyer. I'm going to wrestle on the side, but don't want anyone to know I'm a lawyer. So I'm going to be the attorney. You know, it's like the defendant. It's like, what the fuck?
The defendant, the bailiff.
Could have picked anything but the student. So scouted by Bruno, began wrestling in Pittsburgh, stopped wearing the mask, began going by the name George Steele. Soon made his way to the WWF under Vince McMahon Sr. Steele's character began to develop into a wild heel, would tear the ring turnbuckles apart with his teeth and be given the moniker The Animal. Steele would remain a heel until this night on Saturday Night's Main Event. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before the match, we have Mean Gene in the aisle, interviews Wyndham, Rotundo, Steamboat, and Albano, talk about what happened to Mania, say they want the revenge tonight and a title rematch. And Albano calls out Blassie as they head to the ring, and they also have sweet matching jackets, which I enjoyed, all three guys.
Yes, they have the cool USA jackets. Yes.
USA jacket for even for Steamer.
Yeah, right. It's like they had it. They had it in reserve for whoever their teammate was. Before we get to talk about the match, Ryan, and you know, maybe don't talk about what happens here, but what are your thoughts in general? Like, were you a George Steele fan at all? Or I know you started watching after he was there, but going back and rewatching stuff?
Well, going back and just watching, first is just like, you know, who he's fighting and stuff. The first thing I saw him in was WrestleMania 2 facing Savage, and what is probably one of the worst matches of Savage's WWF career. It's just so bad, and I hated George the Animal Steele even as like a 5-year-old, 6-year-old kid. I just thought he was boring, and all of his matches, like, I wasn't, you know, a work rate kid when I was 6 years old, but even then, I was like, these matches are boring, and all he does is eat the turnbuckle. And I guess he was, what, 52 or something then, so.
Right. But also, all you're seeing him, you know, going back and watching, is like he's getting marquee matches. So regardless of his age, they're still using him in these spots.
Well, if you do the math, you said he was born in 37?
Yeah.
So 37. He was only 48. Did he look like he was like 68?
Yeah, but still, 48 is pretty old to be at this time. To be true. A marquee star in a promotion like this.
Stacked roster they have. And,
right.
Yeah, true.
wasting time on him. But yeah, no, I was never a fan either. We'll see, though. I've come around to Lou Albano to this project. We'll see if Drew Steele as well. But so interested six man would kick things off as the tag title feud continues. Scott, like you said, we've seen this really play out since WrestleMania. We saw it continue on the house show and then here. So another different incarnation as well, as they're keeping it fresh. We saw the singles matches and now the six man. Great three-man face unit as well. And I like how Steamboat's kind of become the de facto tag partner in these hot feuds. We saw him team up with Tito Santana on that house show, and now he's teaming up with these guys here. So kind of just a friendly face on the roster that can join up in these units when needed. Good heat for the heels, including Nikolai singing the anthem. The faces come charging out to Born in the USA, and the crowd gets revved up. Albano's brought some good energy with the Express since joining up, and he's all fired up here. Vince calls out the former ties between Steele and Albano as Sheik and Windham open up. Vince also does a nice job of subtly explaining the basics to new viewers, I thought, like just of tag wrestling and everything going on in general. I thought he did a really good job kind of setting that primer course for anyone that may be tuning in for the first time, finding it on NBC. Windham works over the Sheik, keeps him off balance as all three men as they continue to work the arm. Rotundo slams Sheik down for a two count before grabbing a front face lock. And Vince says he believes it's the only time, the second time, that Steele has ever been in a tag match. I didn't go back and look that up, but Vince said, I don't know where he got the second time. Like, I don't know what the first one was. But although, didn't he have a pretty well-publicized match with Albano? Like, weren't they in a tag match sometime against someone?
Who was that?
Steele.
Steele? Yeah, wasn't it Albano? And no, well, wasn't the whole feud in 84 when Hogan was training Mean Gene, wasn't that? Or was that Fuji?
It was Fuji.
That was Fuji. It was Fuji and Steel against Hogan and Mean Gene. I think it was like a local feud in Minneapolis.
Right.
I don't think it was like a
so maybe that's the other
feud
match he's talking about. Because he says he's only ever been, this is only his second ever tag match. So.
Yeah, that might have been the first one.
All right, Steamboat comes in, but Sheik reverses a whip and grabs an abdominal stretch. Steamboat works out of that and leads to a big brawl between all six men that ends with the heels regrouping on the floor. After a break, the crowd is fired up into a hot USA chant. The match reset with Steamboat and Sheik. Steamer hit a power slam followed by a missile dropkick and then a high cross body for two. Volkoff made the save, but Windham met him with right hands. Sheik finally escaped and tagged in Nikolai, but he got caught and pelted by a double dropkick by the former champs. They continued to double team, followed by Rotundo hitting a pair of leg drops for two. Steele interfered, allowing Nikolai to get a glimmer of offense, but Rotundo quickly turned that around and smothered the Russian with offense and pin attempts. Windham tagged in and kept the pressure on until Nikolai slid free and tagged in Steele. Windham slugged away, and the Animal looked to his corner, but the champs refused to tag back in, and Animal yelled at them. Windham came up from behind and rolled him up for the win. After the bout, you get Steele ripping up the turnbuckle pad before the tag champs attack him from behind. Steele fights them off to a big pop, and then Albano comes in and talks him down, seemingly reforming their friendship. Gene catches up with Blassie and the tag champs in the aisle. Blassie calls Steele a fruitcake before Animal arrives and they brawl. That word gets thrown around so much in 85. It's like everywhere. I thought it was a fun opening match. Basically a squash. A showcase for new viewers. I thought it was a good choice for this slot as Windham, Rotundo, and Steamboat. They all work crisp. They all work frantic on offense. I thought that could hook New Eyes nicely as a good showcase match. And the U.S. Express continued to chase their gold and get another key win. I just want to star and a half here. I enjoyed it. But again, pretty much just a squash with the heels getting like no offense. And if you watch this without knowing, you wouldn't even know that like Nikolai and Sheik were tag champs. They just get completely worked over in this match. But what did you think, Ryan?
Yeah, like you said, just a quick opener. And like you were saying with Vince, I noticed that also. I think maybe that's why he had himself do it instead of Gorilla, because you know, as great as Gorilla is, sometimes he's not going to be that into it, and he might not be trying to explain things as much. So maybe with Vince, it was more of, I know what to get across. I'm going to do this because this is going to be seen by more people than WrestleMania, obviously, on NBC.
Right, yeah, no, that's a good point, too.
But yeah, as far as the match, just kind of vanilla opener, quick match, like all these matches are. But yeah, I thought it was a good job of, you know, keeping the face, having the face team win. They were the hot young team at the time. Pretty good.
What'd you think, Scott?
Well, first, JR, I believe I found the previous tag match. It was August 26th, 1984, at the Met Center in Minneapolis. WWF World Champion Hulk Hogan and Gene Okerlund defeated George Steele and Mr. Fuji at 10:21 when Okerlund pinned Fuji after Hogan slammed his partner onto Fuji and then pushed down on top of him during the cover. Jesse Ventura sat ringside for the match. After the bout, Ventura argued with the referee over the call and briefly faced off against Hogan until Hogan and Okerlund cleared the ring of Steel and Fuji. So there you go. There's the mysterious match. First off, where did the network get this terrible generic like USA music? It was absurdly bad.
Horrible.
So bad. Of course, it was replacing.
Born in the USA.
I don't think that. Yeah, I think it was still Born in the USA. I don't think Real American was used yet. I mean, that music was just atrocious.
It was like some pop country rap.
Yeah, like that didn't even sound, Ryan, like something that Jim Johnston would even make. It sounds like something on one of those like, you know, post production editing CDs, like track 47.
Yeah.
USA pop country kind of thing, like with ridiculous lyrics and so I mean that's just so bad. The match, like you said, solid match. US Express still cooking. I tell you, you know, you want to talk about individual guys that have just looked great in the ring. Is anybody looking better right now than Mike Rotundo? I mean, he looks tremendous in the ring right now. He's locked in right now. I mean, Barry's okay. I mean, Barry's Barry. He'll get better as he gets older and, you know, what happens to him over the next couple of years. And as for the George Steele face turn, I think for some reason they knew that as bad a wrestler as he is, and this I'm playing devil's advocate here because I know none of us are, you know, great shakes with him. I think their philosophy was, here's a guy who's kind of goofy and, you know, acts kind of weird, and Vince is probably thinking, you know, in the 70s he was a scared looking heel guy, but now in this era where we're trying to, you know, bring the kids in and everything, maybe if we have like a goofy kind of cuddly, you know, whack job baby face with the fur and everything and the green tongue and everything, that maybe it's something that would attract kids. Oh, look, here's George Steele. Oh, and you can have like, you can make like dopey segments out of it on the Cindies, and nobody really gives a crap about his wrestling ability. At least he's something funny, and you know, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, whether it's worked or not. Black.
He should have just turned face, had one match, and then retired. That's what I would add him to.
He should have beat Blassie and then moved on and went back to teaching. Yeah.
So he had actually wrestled once in 85 before this, and that was February.
Yeah. I was looking that up also because it's like it came out of nowhere. Like,
yeah.
Here's this guy. Like, especially all the new viewers they had in the year, you know.
Right.
How many of them remembered hated 70s villain George Steele?
And Vince doesn't really explain too much of his background on the show. So, I mean, I guess maybe if you're ever going to do the turn, just do it here and get it done. So just establish him as a face. You kind of do the turn as a nod to the fans that know him, and then the other ones just see him become a good guy, I guess. I don't know. But he, I don't know. He just doesn't do it for me. He's just...
No, it's idiotic.
Boring it really to watch.
One thing I did like was... when they do the commercial break, he comes back and the crowd's chanting USA and he's very upset about it, which is kind of odd because he was always, even when he was the Animal, he was never parts unknown. He was always billed as from Detroit, Michigan. So I don't know why he was so bent out of shape of
maybe
the crowd chanting USA.
Trying to win over that Ontario crowd, you know, right over the border. Keep his cred. What'd you have as a grade on this one, Scott?
Oh, I'll go with you. I'll go star and a half. Mm-hmm. It was mildly entertaining. I think Sheik and Volkov did not look as good as they should have. I'm fine with it, though.
I kind of don't mind. Like, they're fluky champs anyway. They were booked as fluky champs. And to me, it's more important to get this show started with a sprint sweep like this versus any kind of want a long match here trying to hook these people just tuning in maybe for the first time ever. Having three good-looking, young, fast-paced, you know, good guys beating up on three foreign, ugly-looking dudes. Like, I think that was a real shrewd opener. Like, I thought they really did a nice job slotting these six guys as an opener for new fans. Like, if you were seeing Wyndham and Rotundo and Steamboat flying around the ring with their USA jackets and Bruce Springsteen playing, like, that is a great hook. You know, I can't – besides, like, Hogan himself or Andre, like, I don't think anyone on the face side would have been a better hook for new fans than these three guys. I thought they did a great job picking just three really good-looking dudes to be out there that can work their asses off.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it's this big deal with Sheik and Volkov. They were kind of fluky, and you kind of knew at some point down the line, just based on the way this match was booked, that Wyndham and Rotundo were going to win the belts back. It was just a matter of time, so... So there you go. Our official time. Let's see. We had 6.5 minutes I'm curious to what Graham had. Let me see. Did he have 6.5 as well? That's probably about what the length. Yeah, 6.5. So yeah. Moderately.
6:30. So.
Yeah, so it's about 6.5. Nothing offensive. It was good enough. It was good for what it was. And nothing too crazy. And the baby faces look strong as they continue their run to regaining their lost tag team championships. All right, JR. And of course, Mean Gene afterwards interviewed the heels, the dastardly heels who left him hanging.
Yep.
And they talk about that he's a whack job. He's not listening. He was supposed to tag in and he didn't. He's crazy. And Blassie just blew them off. So there you go. And next up, do we have the was there a segment here? Oh, yes. Before our second match, JR, we did have something lingering at the end of WrestleMania 1, and that was what had happened to the heel tag team in that match between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. We all know what happened at the end of WrestleMania 1. We saw nothing about that at our house show last month at the Garden, but some things were hopefully resolved this evening, JR, or were they?
Well, we did see it at the Garden, Scott. We also saw it in Toronto, that Maple Leaf Gardens house show where Paul Orndorff wrestled Hulk Hogan and shook hands after the match. So, but we do have Piper's Pit here where Roddy Piper and Bob Orton are in the ring chatting with Paul Orndorff. Piper says he wants to talk man-to-man about Mania. Orndorff calls Orton a dunce and tells him to go stand in the corner and then quotes Clint Eastwood to a pop. Piper asks Orton to oblige and tells Orndorff to sit down. Paul says ladies first, so Piper sits and calls Orndorff a loser, but Orndorff just barks back at Orton to stay in the corner and for Piper to stay in his chair. So they both sit back down, and Piper said it was Orndorff's shoulders that were pinned to the ground and not his. Orndorff asks him where he was during the aftermath, but Piper says he was doing his job, fighting everyone off, while Orndorff lost his guts. Orndorff says Piper has been drinking too much of his own bathwater. Piper says Orndorff is such a piece of garbage, he'll slap him if he wants to fight. He says Orndorff embarrassed himself, Orton, Piper, and his family, and then Orndorff shoves Piper, triggering a big brawl. Orndorff tries for a pile driver, but Orton cracks him in the head with the cast. Mr. T comes out for the save, and the segment ends with a stare down between the four men. I thought it was a great segment. It keeps the Piper-Orndorff feud burning. It was a nice usage of Mr. T. I thought it was smart to utilize him on this show. Exhibit, it's an ongoing partnership with him and WWE or WWF, even though it's not really after this. I mean, it is, but I guess it's just not consistent. But it makes it like he's still part of the show. So, you know, this is your first big mainstream program since WrestleMania. Let's bring out our huge celebrities right out of the gate. We got Mr. T here coming out. And anyone watching this had to be compelled with Piper and Orndorff going at it. Scott, what did you think of the pit here?
I thought it was very good. Orndorff with those ridiculous tennis shorts or whatever. That was a little too revealing there, Mr. Wonderful. Or as Jesse called him at the end, Mr. Blunderful. Mm-hmm. But that was fine. That was a good, you know, it sets up a feud for them. And Orton was working double duty, was serving as Piper's bodyguard and was wrestling this evening. But I thought it was a fine segment, a little short, but probably shot earlier in the show, probably during the the dark matches. I'm sure they did it then to kind of make sure they fit it in the block. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good way to move things along and move that feud along. What'd you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Moved the feud, kept it going. I liked Orndorff's slam of Piper drinking his own bathwater. I'm not sure what exactly that means, but...
Drinking your own bathwater!
Yeah, it was fun. And then I also liked when he brought him up for the pile driver. We got to see that Piper was wearing some actual black underwear and not his usual blue tights, which I kind of found odd.
What did you think of how the feud kind of went from Mania to here, Ryan? Do you think it was a good pacing? Like, it's been about a month. Actually, less than a month. It was Mania. It was March 31st.
Yeah.
So a little over a month. How did you think it was progressing at this point with Orndorff turning face?
A good way to do it. Like, I actually watched the Toronto show you were talking about, and I'm assuming they did that at some other house shows, like showed him still fighting Hogan, but starting to turn, and then this was your next big show that everyone would watch at once, and I think that's the perfect time to totally solidify him as a Orndorff as a face and let people know what the next step's going to be.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been really good. I mean, and it's a natural feud. It gets Piper away from Hogan just a little bit. I mean, he's still there, but just a little bit for a few months, and it gives him this blood feud with Orndorff, who all of a sudden is super hot as a face after being such a tremendous heel. It was really well done. It was really well done. And again, I think we're 2 for 2 so far on this show with a really a smart opener and a real fun pit.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And you know that. I mean, you knew that feud was going to build after Mania, and now it's really going to happen. So, all right. Next up, our second match of the evening and our first of two title matches on the evening, JR. Mm-hmm. And this makes sense. We did it. You know, we didn't have it at Mania, but the World Wrestling Federation Championship is on the line. Your champion, of course, the big guy himself, taking on a guy who's, already did a little work this evening and is going to do some more. JR, what do we got?
Well, first we stop in the aisle where Mean Gene interviews Hulk Hogan, the world champion, and Hogan says we need to get dudes like Piper and Orton out of the WWF. He dedicates this match to his mother for Mother's Day, and Gene asks Hogan about Orndorff's change. Hulk said he felt what it was like to have fans and the Hulkamaniacs behind him, and he hopes that he can keep it up. So there you go, a little bit of an endorsement from Hulk here for Orndorff. And Hogan is defending his championship against Cowboy Bob Orton, of course, kind of just stepping in, surrogate for Piper here, getting a title match. And I thought it was a good choice. I'll talk about that in a minute. Good match structure. They're able to hype it a bit, but not have it too late in the night. It would be a key component of Saturday Night's Main Events, where the biggest matches would always be within the first two or so. Try and get everyone that's either staying up late or checking it out the first time in before midnight or around that time before it starts to get too late. We get a big pop for Hogan and good heat for Piper and Orton. As always, Hogan's in the red and yellow, and after a break, we see that T has joined him in the ring. So, again, utilizing T well. Orton attacks off the bell, but Hogan fights him off and rattles him with right hands and slams, and that sends Ace to the floor to regroup with Piper. Orton comes in, catches Hulk with a knee, but he whiffs on a charge and crashes into the ring post shoulder first. Hogan grabs the arm and hammers away on the injured forearm before wrapping it around the post. Jesse notes that Hogan's using a vicious streak here, as Orton then cuts him down with a dropkick. Ace goes to work with some basic strikes, targeting the upper back and head. Orton continues to rattle the champ with a focused attack, using fists and the mat to wear him down. The crowd and T do all they can to rally Hogan, but Ace kept laying in those hard blows to the head and neck. Hogan finally hulks up and starts to fire away with right hands before leveling Orton with a clothesline and elbow drop for two. Hogan mounts Ace on the corner, but Orton walks out to an inverted atomic drop. Orton loads Hogan up for a superplex, but Hogan punches out of it and knocks Orton backwards. Hulk met him with a sledge off the middle rope and hits a leg drop, but as he covered, Piper punches him in the face with a DQ. Piper hops in the ring and attacks, but T makes a save. Orton cracks T with the cast and wipes him out. Orndorff comes out, and T and Hogan recover, and they all clean house, a big pop. I was a really good title match. It gives Hogan plenty of shine for the new NBC platform. Orton is the perfect opponent. He's got good heat. He's a strong heel. It keeps the Piper feud going. He can work a good match. And also, he can take a beating and lose with no problem. So he is like in that sweet spot of heel on the roster where he is. He's over enough to be in this match, but he's not super over or useful to the point where he has to be protected, even though he is a bit... And he's a great worker, too, so he can help Hogan along in this match. I thought Hogan came off as a star, as usual. I thought this was really needed on the show to have Hogan on to further the Piper feud. I thought it was all really smart, and I went 2 stars. What'd you think, Scott?
I'm going to give this 2.5. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why. I love watching Orton wrestle. He's just a super worker. So I got no issues with him at all. I think that was a great pick. You know, for an opponent, and yeah, kudos to Hogan. I mean, he really worked his butt off in this match. We're in the alternate white tights.
Oh, yeah, the yellow and red here.
Did he have the yellow and red?
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of the other. I'm thinking of the other match. My bad. I'm thinking of when he wrestled Morocco last week. Yeah, he's got the yellow and red, but he's they work well together. You know, they're stiff. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. It was very un-Hogan-like. I was expecting a more kind of paint-by-numbers dancing around Hogan, but there was actually some real shit going on in the ring. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed. I enjoyed the match a lot. 2.5. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I agree. It was not your typical Hogan match where, you know, he comes out hot, gets on defense, then hulks up and wins. He was going after that hand to start really viciously, like slamming it into the posts and stuff. And also, I liked... like we were talking about earlier, the advanced graphics and camera work and stuff that NBC brought, you see that a lot in this match. And I think they knew this was like the featured match. This is what people are going to turn in to watch.
Right.
You got, you know, like those house shows in MSG, they have one, maybe two cameras. Here, it seemed like they had three cameras in the ring, and then they kept doing shots of T, shots of Piper, and just really giving like a much more professional movie-like feel to it then.
Yeah, and I think they were doing that too, just to help probably keep attention spans. Like, yeah. Newer fans aren't going to want to watch a long rest hold or understand psychology. I mean, you have an hour and a half right now to sell your product to a potentially huge new audience. Whether they're tuning in or not is there for the taking. If they are watching, you want something that's moving quickly, cutting a great pace, real sleek. And like you said, Ryan, that's what was going on here. We're cutting. We're going to the crowd. We're going to Piper. We're showing Mr. T. You know, we're never allowing the viewer to sit back and ever get bored. And I thought that was key for a show like this.
Two more notes I wanted to add to mine. Number one, Hogan was so – I mean, JR, we were doing the house show last week when he had the title match with Morocco. The crowd was nuclear when he was coming down the mm-hmm. ramp. The aisle. And the same thing on this night. However, if you're watching it on the network, they dubbed Real American in to cover Eye of the Tiger, and they killed the buzz.
Yeah.
The crowd was probably 10 times hotter than it was if you watch this on the network.
Right.
Because they dubbed Real American in and to cover Eye of the Tiger, and it kind of killed the buzz. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see if they had... the crowd acting a lot. It seems like they're cheering a lot more than it's actually
coming across.
Yeah, and you can tell that it's dubbed because they're kind of off. Like, Real American starts, yeah. And then it takes, like, 6 seconds for everybody to go crazy. So you can tell that they didn't even line it up right. I want to talk about Mr. T for a minute because it's going to also come into play when we talk about our next match after the break. I thought that – I'm sure everybody probably thought that T was, like, a one-shot thing mm-hmm. for the main event of Mania and that we'd never see him again. I was actually very happy he was there. Not just because – I mean, I know it's on NBC and that help matters. And, JR, your theory's right on about we don't need a long, you know, technical whiz-bang match. We just need to have the stars on to hook the people in. I get that. However, you could have – they could have conceivably done that without Mr. T. But the fact that he wanted to stick around and help out a month and a half after Mania ended is actually pretty cool. And I'm sure they paid him.
I was going to say, let's say he's not out there out of his generosity.
No, it's not charity. No, I know that. But the fact that they bothered to pay him anyway.
Right.
Instead of just letting it go and saving it for just the, you know, having him just do Mania and then the build and then walk away. And the same comes into play for somebody else later in the show. Means that they're out, they're still in for good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still trying to push the product. And you know, Vince obviously got a pretty good check after WrestleMania. So he's got a little, a little play money. And he probably gave T a few more dates, probably like the Brock deal that there is now where he, you know, comes in every once in a while. And I'm sure they said, look, we're on national TV. We could use a little pump. Do you mind mm-hmm. coming and, you know, giving us a hand? And I'm sure he was more comfortable now because, you know, remember the whole thing at Mania where he was, right. You didn't know where he was and he was nervous and everything. Well, I'm sure after that, since he didn't have to really wrestle, he probably was a little more comfortable.
Yeah, no, I thought he came across naturally in a lot of this stuff. I thought he's really... done a good job of coming off as believable. He doesn't, you know, I mean, it's not like a normal actor either. I mean, he's a guy that's presented in his, you know, public life as an athlete. I mean, you know, he was believable. He was Copper Lang, even on A-Team. He's an athlete. He's a big bruiser. So he's not like he's not an actor. We have to suspend belief that he's hanging in there. I mean, he's a believable looking athlete, especially with all the training stuff they did too with Hogan.
Right. Right. So, but it was nice to see him still there and still kind of helping the product along and it was cool to see him involved. So Hulk Hogan retains his World Wrestling Federation Championship in a pretty good match, 2.5-star affair. And let's see, our official time 6:54, mm-hmm. which is about a good time for a TV match. So, all right, we got two matches left plus some other stuff. Why don't we take a break, Ryan? What are your thoughts on the show so far?
Pretty good. Two quick, well-paced matches, I thought. And the Piper's Pit, I think, was really well done, you know, especially thinking of it as, like we were saying, to try and hook new viewers. I think everything's been really well paced. Nothing's going too long, but it's also given a good introduction to all these characters.
Yeah, I agree. JR, enjoying it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was well done. And I like that we've seen the progression of these feuds, the tag title feud, Hogan Piper, T in there, Orton, Orndorff. Like, We've jammed so much into these first two matches. It's been great. So we have a lot going on, even the steel face turn. So, I mean, there's been a ton going on in just this first half of the show.
Exactly, exactly. We got more to come. So why don't we take a break? When we come back, we have two matches left, and then we get some other fun stuff at the end of the show, because it was near Mother's Day, so keep that in mind. But we have another title match coming up, and then a nice squash with one of our favorite jobbers of the era. Mm-hmm. And Aaron George is a favorite family member of the Ritter family. But first, many words and messages from around the universe, because...
John Ritter.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit clotheslines and headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Hey, this is Scott Keith, the former Net Cop. You're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to a look back at Saturday's Main Event number one from May of 1985. Myself, Scott, Ryan Everett in the house taking a look back. And Scott, you know, I say a lot of mean things to you. I bust your balls a lot. talk about how old you are, what you are. But I should admit to you, I'm crazy about you.
I know you are. I know. You know. You put your hand... Never mind. I could have kept going with the lyrics, but then it would get really too weird.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this song often, JR, over the last couple of house shows. But and this is actually the first time, because normally our house show...
Did I say crazy about you? I should have said crazy for you.
Crazy for you, but that's okay.
I botched it.
Yeah, you did, but that's all right.
Damn it.
I know you didn't mean it.
What?
This is the first time, because, you know, most of the MSG house shows were on Monday nights. Usually the Billboard weekly list came out on Saturday mornings. So this one's actually fresh. Came out that morning, May 11th. And this was its first week at number one. It usurped... our number one, JR, at our last house show, which was, of course, USA for Africa's We Are the World. We are the world. By the way, Ryan, you got to sing that at the end. We didn't tell you that, did we?
Okay. No, that's
yeah.
Fine.
Okay,
I'll
good.
Do the Berlin version.
So Crazy for You over the last week hopped over USA for Africa and is the new number one song in the country. Number two, as mentioned, We Are the World, USA for Africa. Number three, most of these songs, JR, we've already talked about over the past few weeks. Number three. From The Breakfast Club, Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me. Number four, this is a song, if you listen to it enough, I know you'd like it. This is like, it's not really yacht rock, but it's got that cool 80s poppy sound, and that's DeBarge with A Little Rhythm of the Night. Weren't they on an episode of like Hoop Jump Shot? What was that show with Reggie Theus? Jump Shot? That show that
no,
was on Saturday
time.
Morning?
Hang
Time.
Definitely not Hoop Jump.
Hoop Jump. I was thinking Hoop Dreams, but that was the movie. I think DeBarge was on that show. I think it was.
Okay.
Or one of those shows in the 80s. I think it was that one. Number five, the D'Amato special. One
time.
Murray Head there.
That's right. Well, if anyone listened to the last episode, you know, we played it in its entirety for you. So.
Yes, we did. Number six, JR, moved up a spot in the poll from the week before, but it's the first time we've talked about it. Some Like It Hot by The Power Station. You know who The Power Station was? It was Robert Palmer, you know, the guy who had all the hot chicks in the videos later on in the decade. It was him and some other British artists, one of them being I'm not sure which Taylor it was. One of the Taylors that left Duran Duran, either Mick or Andy, I'm not sure which one. I think it was Andy Taylor, left Duran Duran temporarily.
Did he go to God damn it, I couldn't think of the town.
Mayberry.
Mayberry, god damn it. 0-2 in this segment.
You get like me now.
I had the joke lined up and I couldn't think of the fucking
thing. Yeah, so they got together, did The Power Station, and then they did Some Like It Hot, which was at number six this week. At number seven, JR, I talked about it. I mentioned to you today, yacht rock staple moved up three spots from 10 to 7. Our girl Sade. Smooth operator.
I was going to be, is everything all right?
Is everything all right? No, we're about 6 years past that song. Yeah. You wish we were. Well, if we go back to house shows in 1980, you know, one day maybe we
not will. Worth it. Not worth it.
Yeah, no, yeah. But yes, Sade, smooth operator at number seven. Number eight, if you listen to the most recent music show on the PTBM Pop feed, you'll hear myself, Mr. D'Amato, Mr. Greenhouse talk a lot about this gentleman. The late, great George Michael, still in Wham with Everything She Wants. Number nine, a song we just mentioned, JR, because it used to be the opening theme for Science Main Event. That was Obsession by Animotion. Dropped three spots to nine. And number 10, a debut on our shows, but moved up four spots to number 10. Another 80s British staple, Tears for Fears. Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Everybody Wants to... Was that their only big song?
No, they had Shout.
Oh, okay.
Shout, Let It All... That was later on in the decade. It might even be later on this year. We may get to it in the fall.
That's the big wedding song, right?
It was later this year. I was looking at the...
Yeah, so when we get to, like, the September-October shows, I think we see Shout. But for now, number 10, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Shout, Tears for Fears, Shout, so when they play at the weddings, right?
No, that's... No, that's the other Shout.
Okay.
That's the Shout.
No, I know. Imagine if they played that. That'd be like an emo wedding, you know.
Yeah, it would be pretty awesome. Anyway, for this week, May 11th, 1985, Crazy for You by Madonna is the number uno song in the country.
DeBarge was right. On Facts of Life.
Ah, okay. I knew they were on one of those cool 80s sitcoms. I thought it was Hoop Jumps.
You consider...
Jump Hoops.
That wasn't even 80s Hang Time. That was like 90s.
Was it really? I thought it was like 88. All right, maybe not.
No, it was like mid-90s, I think.
Oh, was it? Oh, was Rich? So I guess Reggie Theus was already retired by then?
Hang on. 95 to 2000.
Oh, I thought it was like 88. Maybe I was thinking of My Two Dads because
I thought Butkus was. Were you thinking of Hanging with Mr. Cooper?
Oh, maybe I was. Well, that might have been even 90s too, though, wasn't it? No, I was thinking. I actually was thinking My Two Dads as well because Dick Butkus was on both. So
92 to 97.
Okay. Mark. Anyway,
I always found it interesting too because if you think back, like him and Danny Tanner, both super into the Warriors, and like the Warriors were trash for like all those years, but they were
honestly, yeah. I mean, mid-80s. I mean, they were okay. I mean, they weren't great. I mean, they were average.
But he played for them. You know, Mark Curry in the
Sleepy
show.
Floyd. Yes, he did. Theus. He also played for the.
No, it wasn't Theus. It was Mark Cooper.
Oh, Mark Cooper. Yes.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper. Let's see, 92 to. Curry. Yeah, they weren't really that good, huh? Yeah, they're pretty awful.
Yeah, the one year in like 93. Was it 93 they made the playoffs? Didn't they play the Suns as like the 8 seed? That was the Hardaways like last year.
No, the Lakers played the Suns in 93. The 91 was Run TMC. That was Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Sarunas Marcellonis or whatever the guy's
Chris
name
Mullen,
is.
No, Chris Mullen, wasn't it?
And Mullen, too. Right. But he wasn't. Was that TMC? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that was 91. They made a run, and the Lakers beat them.
They made it again, though, later. I thought it was like 93 or 94 they made it. Like, they had like one last little bounce, and then they sucked for like a long time.
Well, 93, it couldn't have been 93 because they had one of the top two picks in the draft unless it was a trade because that was the whole Penny-Weber swap. So they had one of the top two picks, so they couldn't have been 93. It might have been later in the decade. We'll have to look. In any event, the day before, that Friday, of course, was movie release day, and sadly, JR, we don't have anything too juicy this week. Two movies came out. Ready?
93-94, they finished sixth, lost the Suns in the first round.
93-90. What was it, 93-94?
Yeah, so it was the next year.
Wow. So they made that big a hop? Wow. That was impressive.
Well, they finished 10th, missed the playoffs, and the next year they lost, but then they didn't make it again until 2006-07.
Okay. I was going to say, I mean, they had one of the top two slots in the 93 draft, because that was a draft where they swapped Penny and
Weber
with Orlando. All right, so this movie came out the day before, made $2.86 million. Ready? It's called Rappin'. R-A-P-P-I-N. Rappin'. No, it's not. It's not, what was it? Break Into Electric Boogaloo. No, it's not Breakin'. It's Rappin'. But it made $2 million, so it must have had some kind of big...
Rappin'. Does it have the little apostrophe?
Yeah, it has a little apostrophe, yes.
Yep. All right, let's see if it comes up here. Rappin'. Yes. Released July 11th, 1985, starring Mario Van Peebles.
Oh, well, then it had to have been an incredible performance.
Eric LaSalle is in there as Ice.
What, like ER Eric LaSalle? Really?
Yeah, it was probably early on for him. Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, that's from Hartford, Connecticut.
Kadeem Hardison.
What?
Theo Huxtable.
We're going to Sizzler.
Richie Abanes, Ronnie Clanton, Ritania Alda.
Mm.
There you go. She's a Latvian American actress.
Latvian.
Rapping John Hood. I'm sorry, go Ryan.
Oh no, I'm just saying that when you come to the next movie that debuted, I got the summary for this one.
You'd like to do that.
Yes, but so no, go ahead with Rappin', though.
Well, this is actually the sequel to Break Into Electric Boogaloo. Is that what you said?
What?
Yeah. A 1985 film directed by Joel Spielberg. The film is a sequel to Break Into Electric Boogaloo and is also known as Breakdance 3 Electric Boogaloo.
That was a total guess.
Although it features Ice-T, Rappin' has a plot unconnected to the previous two films and features different lead characters and locations. The film has a small cult following, despite Van Peebles' lack of rapping ability and the film's
really?
Poor production values. So Rappin' John Hood, played by Van Peebles, an ex-convict attempts to save his neighborhood from developers and hoodlums. Mario Van Peebles' raps are overdubbed by Master G of the Sugar Hill Gang, who also wrote one part. Ice-T's small role is uncredited, and he reportedly provided the rhymes, including the hero's climactic lines, "Can't stop, won't stop, climbing that mountain till we reach the top." Earned $2.9 million total in the box office in the U.S.
Yes. So no Lucinda Dickey. She was the girl. I remember her very well. She was in both Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. Wow. I had no idea those were connected. All right. Mr. Everett, you've got the number one movie. It made $4.84 million, and it was called Rustler's Rhapsody.
Yes, I saw this on the box office, and I had to look this up. So stars the great Tom Berenger. And the plot says, while the audience watches a black and white horse opera, a narrator's voice wonders what such a movie would be like today. Rex O'Harlan, the singing cowboy, finds himself in color and enters a cliche-ridden town in which the evil cattle baron, played by Andy Griffith, of course, and the new Italian cowboys, who always wear raincoats no matter how hot it gets, joined forces to get him and the sheep ranchers to leave the valley.
Our okay. Second Andy Griffith mentioned, by the way, on this.
Yes. My.
Is he dead, Andy Griffith? Yeah, he did, 2012.
Yes, he did die. Matlock is dead. Yes, Matlock is dead. Well, I will say this, fortunately. Next week, JR, I looked ahead to that following Friday, the 17th, which will be.
Do you think they played Bohemian Rhapsody and Russell's Rhapsody?
Italian guys singing it. I've paid the Maya dues. It's like Salvatore Palomo singing it.
I shot that horse.
What's that? What'd you say?
I said I shot that horse.
I made the pizza with the D'Amato. I'm starting to sound like fucking Giante. Imagine Giante singing that.
No.
I paid my dues. All right. Well, when we're on next week, JR, when we do our next show, that following Friday, the 17th, there were two big, I mean, no joking, big time heavyweight movies that came out that following Friday, the 17th. So we'll get into that on next week's show. All right. Let's go to some sports. In Major League Baseball, on that day, May 11th, all three of our teams were in action. Mr. Everett, your Pale Hose defeated the Detroit Tigers by the score of 7-4.
Oh, wow.
The Yankees brought the bats, JR. Don Baylor with a grand slam.
Jesus.
Yankees beat the Royals in Kansas City 11-3. And the first place New York Mets, I don't get to say that very often, shut out the Phillies at Shea 4-0. So in the four divisions at this moment, the Orioles lead the East at 18-9. The Yankees are in fifth at 12-14. The Angels lead the West at 19-11, three games ahead of the Twins. Ryan, the White Sox were in third place, 13-12, three and a half games out. So not that bad.
Not horrible.
The Mets were leading the East at 18-8. That wouldn't last. And the Padres led the West at 16-13. Remember, they were the defending league champions, the defending National League champions. They were a game ahead of the Dodgers in the NL West.
And then they brought up that female pitcher, and it all went to shit.
We love what the fuck her name was. I totally forgot, and I watched the show too.
We are off tonight.
I know. What the heck is her name? Oh crap, I don't even remember. Good show though.
I'm drawing a blank too.
I know what the heck's her name. I know Mike Lawson is our man. Our man Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Mm-hmm.
Ginny Baker.
Yes, Ginny Baker. Thankful.
Ginny Baker. Great show. Do you like the show?
Yeah, it's really good. I get into it.
I think so too.
It was sad it ended. So do you think it's going to get picked up? I mean, they were talking about the ratings being kind of low.
I think it will. I don't think that'd be good pub for Fox if they don't.
But the thing
show.
Is, they pump a ton of money into it. I mean, they have maybe not because they own all the graphics and everything, but it seems like there's a lot that goes into it. It doesn't seem cheap.
Oh, but they'd still have to pay Major League Baseball for all the rights to do all that stuff. Right. And I mean, it did work out, though, that the All-Star game was there in real life. So it actually worked out pretty well in that episode. Ryan, do you watch the show?
I watched the first two episodes, I think.
You should watch the rest because it got pretty good by the end of the season.
It actually did get pretty good. And, Zach Morris is pretty awesome as Mike Lawson.
And the dad from Wonder Years.
The dad from Wonder Years, Brian. And the guy on if you watched Rescue Me, the bench coach was in Rescue Me. So good show. I like it. In the NBA, on that day, it was game one of the Western Conference Finals. The Lakers beat the Denver Nuggets 139-122. Alex English had 30 in a losing effort for the Nuggets. The next day would be game one of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Sixers. They would start their series the next day. The previous day, the Celtics took out the Pistons in five games. And finally, in hockey, it was an off day for the NHL playoffs. They were in the conference finals, in the Wales Conference Final. At the moment, the Flyers led the Quebec Nordiques, a team that really should be back in the NHL, 2-1. And in the Campbell Conference, or the West.
Chad Campbell Conference.
The Chad Campbell Conference.
Okada's leading.
The Oilers lead the Chicago Blackhawks 2-1.
Zach Sabre Jr.'s got 19 points. Only a couple behind.
Only a couple behind. Okada got hosed. So there is your snapshot of this day, May 11th, 1985. Ryan, you know what? We'll cheat for you since we're not sure when you'll be back on. But what do you think? You think the White Sox finished above 500? What do you think?
Probably not, because I know they got a new GM at the end of the year. The horrible Hawk Harrelson, who's now our color commentator.
Oh, God, that guy is such a tool. Oh, he's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a jack.
He was only doing road games this year, which was good because you didn't have to listen to him half the time, but, oh, geez, he's horrible.
Well, they actually went 85-77. They finished.
Oh, wow.
So they stayed right where they were. So they didn't do too bad. Who had the good year statistically? Carlton Fisk was still playing. He had wow. What a year for him, huh? Hit he only hit .238, but he had 37 homers and 107 runs batted in.
Wow, that's probably his highest homers.
Greg Walker had 24 homers, 92 RBIs. Harold Baines, he was still red hot. .309, 22 homers, 113 RBIs. And Ron Kittle, ex-Yankee, had 26 homers and 58 RBIs. And your best pitcher was Tom Seaver. He went 16. As a matter of fact, Tom Seaver won his 300th game that year.
Yeah.
He beat the Yankees in Yankee Stadium on Phil Rizzuto Day when Phil got knocked over by the cow. but your best pitcher that year was Britt Burns. He went 18 and 11. He went 18-11. What's that?
Is that when they gave out the Phil Rizzuto keychains?
I think so. And they actually got a real cow to home plate, and he got knocked over
by the
cow.
And then they got lost in the street, in the pavement.
That's right. So Britt Burns, 18-11, 3.96 ERA, and Tom Seaver went 16-11. Who's your closer? Your closer was this guy named Bob James, who had 32 saves. Well, not bad. Probably an all-star. So there you go, Ryan. There was your 85 White Sox. And there is your pop culture and sports update for May 11th, 1985. So let us, JR, go back to the Nassau Coliseum. And our next match is our second title match of the evening, the Women's Championship on the line. Your champion, still, of course, Wendy Richter, with her awesome manager, Cindy Lauper, taking on the former Women's Champion, JR. Tell us more.
Lanny Kai. Well, that's it. This is a continuation of the feud that, of course, has been raging on since the brawl to end it all, on through the war to settle the score, up to WrestleMania. And here we be. For this one match here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we go to the aisle where Gene chats with Cindy and Wendy. And Cindy says, "You can't be banned. She's Wendy's manager. And her manager stands in no matter what." She says, "Moolah fights dirty." And she choked her in Mania. And they double-teamed Richter. And Cindy says, "Moolah always interferes." And Wendy says, "They have the proof." So the feud raging on. Moolah is hell-bent on getting her title back. Lauper still tied into Richter, torturing Moolah as well. Again, we get a great idea bringing Lauper back to the show, showing that Rock and Wrestling is continuing on past Mania. Crowd is red hot as they enter into Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and they bring out a picture of Moolah and then step on it as the referee reads Moolah's proclamation that she had with her, and Fink announces that Cindy Lauper must leave because Moolah went to... And actually, I meant to talk about that interview, too. So Gene chatted with Moolah in the aisle. Moolah said she had intentions to regain her title and keep it forever, was tired of Cindy Lauper and all the other geeks interfering, convinced the higher-ups to have Lauper barred from the ring during her matches, and if she comes out tonight, Moolah will give the decree to the referee to have her ejected. So that's what led to this. So Moolah gives the decree to the ref. He gives it to Fink, and then Fink says that Cindy must leave. So Cindy's pissed, and she goes and sits in the aisle and watches the match on a TV monitor. Moolah takes over right away after the break, working her usual terrible offense with chokes and cheap strikes and hair pulls. Richter slides to the apron where David Wolf tries to help her regroup. Moolah turns and talks some shit, allowing Wendy to come in and dropkick her to the floor. Wendy follows her out and lays in some shots, but Moolah takes back over in the ring, getting a near fall on a backdrop. Vin says that this could be Moolah's last chance to regain her coveted title. Wendy fights back and chokes Moolah against the ropes and then pancakes her to the mat. Moolah recovers with a chop and goes back to choking and kicking away. Moolah tries for a slam, but Wendy rolls through with a small package for the win and the pop.
Cindy charges back to the ring but gets grabbed by a fan, which was kind of crazy. She breaks free and comes in for the big celebration. This match was terrible. And it shows how much the chaos and hoopla really carried Mania to the next level, and the fact that Lanny Kai could wrestle just a little bit better than Moolah at this point. I think Moolah needs to be put to pasture when it comes to wrestling in the ring. Wendy needs some fresh new opponents. They need to kind of put this feud out of its misery. I think we're done with this. Let Wendy find someone else that she can feud with for a bit and give this a break. I went dud here for the match. I enjoyed seeing Lauper again. Like, the antics are still all there, but the match itself was just not redeemable at all. Moolah's fucking terrible. What'd you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I loved how Moolah's decree was written on, like, the same scroll that I think Julius Caesar read from to start the Royal Rumble 1993.
Right.
Apparently that's what Jack Tunney wrote his decrees on back in the day. But yeah, the match was just absolute garbage. I mean, Moolah's, 60 years old here. I mean, they couldn't have found someone to just, you know, someone that Moolah raised on her farm or whatever. Got her own stable of women.
Just check her fucking basement. I'm sure there was someone there.
Yeah, bring someone out, you know, on Tuesday Night Titans the week before, have them do a squash and have that be this match. This was just, it was like one of the longest 3-minute matches I think I've ever seen. It just kept going, and Moolah's main move is like choking her out, and it was just garbage. I mean, Lauper was like excited, and when she runs, I like how going backstage means sitting in the aisleway watching a monitor, but.
Which I actually thought was kind of shrewd, because they keep her in the eyesight of everyone there. They keep her, they can easily cut to her sitting there. So I thought it was smart. I mean, you're bringing her in anyway. You're going to ban her. You might as well keep her in the line of sight.
Although I thought it was weird, you know, she got Cindy Lauper banned, but apparently David Wolf was able to stay her stampering. Right.
He has a legitimate manager's license.
Okay. He's got the real one.
Yeah, Scott, what did you think?
No, I agree with you. I think it was time to put this thing to bed. I don't think there was any need for Moolah to actually Shmoolah to go in there and actually wrestle again. It's utterly ridiculous. You're telling me that there wasn't more other workers? I mean, for God's sakes, where's Judy Martin or you know, those Donna Christianello or somebody like? I mean, at least somebody a little younger. Yeah, I don't understand it. I mean, again, the key thing here is, and it's the same scenario as T was earlier, and that is, I'm glad Cindy stuck around and kind of legitimized this and helped boost the, again, another bad dub job. They probably dubbed again. Girls just want to have fun and. Put some other crap song in its place. It was tough to watch this on the network. I wish I still had it like on tape or something. But it was a good match. It was what it was. And Moolah just needs to just go away and find new competition. I know she was another Vince Senior stalwart, but it was time for Vince Jr. if he was going to stick with Wendy Richter and boost this women's division to get some younger.
And
faces
actually, I mean, I think Moolah works as a manager. Because she brings good heat still, and she's still a bitch. Like, her promo was actually pretty good. Like, I didn't mind that with the proclamation. She's just fucking god-awful in the ring. Like, that's... She needed to just be in a... Like they did with Blassie and Albano and all these other... Like, they did with her with Kai. It's like, just make her a manager. Just have her keep... If she kept bringing in girls to challenge Richter, like, that's fine. But either get Richter away from her or put Moolah solely as a manager. Don't... You know, make her the Bobby Heenan... chasing the Hogan with, you know what I mean, like just have her keep running the stable out there, or like with Andre, whatever he's doing now, but have the stable keep running out there to take Richter out. Don't get in the ring yourself. Like, no one wants to see it. Just, you're awful. Go
right.
The fuck away.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, Ryan, on this one before we move on?
No, that's about it.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. Shame for Wendy. But all right, but she does retain, though, her women's championship, and she beat Moolah clean, so that helps too. As bad as the match was, at least she beat her clean. All right, we go down the ramp to Mean Gene, who is with the Junkyard Dog, right? And who is his special guest?
His special guest is, the apple of Aaron George's Canadian eye.
That's right.
Gene chats with Junkyard Dog and his mama, Bertha, who's making her first trip to New York for Mother's Day. And she hopes he can come home soon. So, I don't know what that means, because if he comes home, he's either retired or injured, probably. But unless it just means for a visit. But anyway, Bertha in the house here with JYD, of course, because it is Mother's Day. And he is facing Pete Daugherty, the Duke of Dorchester. Came into WWF in 1977 under Vince Sr., primarily used as a jobber for the Stars back in the day. Character is known for missing teeth, his long blonde hair, and his loud screaming in the ring, and eventually his super sexist, racist commentary on some house shows as well. Any memories of Pete Daugherty, Ryan?
My best is, I think it's the, was it a Houston house show where it's him, Bruce Pritchard, Bruce Pritchard, and Mike McGuirk as the announce team, and probably the worst three-person announce team of all time.
Yep. That's brutal. It's the tribute show to
for Paul Bosch.
Yes,
Paul Bosch.
It was in 88, I think it was, right?
87. Yeah, I think it's like November 87 or so.
He's grating, and Bruce Pritchard has no personality whatsoever. And
he's struggling to keep that train wreck together, too. Like those two, you know. Ugh, what a mess. Yes, but the Duke is the Duke. Anyone named the Duke kind of sucks. So time to close things out with some jobber action for a nice showcase for JYD. Daugherty fired up as usual, hot off his big TNT appearance, while the jobber parade, of course, run out. JYD marches out with Bertha to a nice ovation, another good choice of someone to showcase on a show like this. JYD slugs Daugherty off the belt and crushes him with a clothesline. The Duke bails to the floor. JYD yanks him by his hair and goes out and pitches him back inside. Duke lays in some punches to no effect as JYD just clubs him back down and pelts him with headbutts. Duke recovers and heads up top, but JYD meets him and slams him down. JYD lands in more headbutts and then drops him the power slam for the easy win. And then the Dog and Bertha celebrate and dance after the win. Just a basic squash to fill out the time slot, showcase JYD, their other top face. And I give this a dud, rightfully so. And I thought they did a good job. I mean, outside of Andre, who's out recovering anyway, they pretty much got all of their top faces, all the guys that they'd want the young fans to see and enjoy and kind of fall in love with. They put them all out here, right? We got Hogan, we got Steamboat, Wyndham, Rotundo, the newly turned George Steele. You got your top female stars. You got Wendy Richter and Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T, and now you got JYD. I mean, I think that's outside of Tito, I guess. Is he the only one that's really missing, Ryan?
Yeah, but I think Tito is kind of
the hammer,
the guy for the house shows. Like for the real wrestling fans, you'll get your Tito and Hammer on
right
prime time, and you know the MSG house shows and stuff like that, and 15-minute matches. You don't want to see them in a 3-minute schmaz at 1 a.m.
Good point. I agree. And they look like they put on a great match in, what was that other show, JR? Pittsburgh? Is that what you said? The Igloo?
Yes.
Was that other house show?
There's a
yeah, and, they, and you know what's great? And I'm loving this feud more and more because they're pulling out stuff. Like, when would WWF ever do a taped fist match? I mean, that's so, like, Crockett, you know? That's awesome. Oh, God, mm-hmm. I'd love to see that match. Wish that was on somewhere.
Ryan, any other thoughts on this match? Just JYD or Duke? Yeah,
just a nice squash to... So, I mean, I know the cartoon wasn't out yet, but it's like they're really trying to showcase all those guys. It seems true. Like you know, all the Hogan friends.
You're right. Yeah, they are. They're running them all out there. Yeah. It was good. I thought he was a good choice to close the show out. Any final thoughts on the match, Scott?
It was just good to see JYD, and I like the Duke. I mean, he you know, yucks it up for the crowd better than some other, you know, loser heel jobbers that wouldn't really do anything. At least the Duke kind of yucked it up and made it somewhat entertaining anyway. But yeah, other than Andre, who you can get on any time. And honestly, at the time, as much as
Andre...
Well,
he was out, right? Wasn't he healing or whatever? Or after Mania? Isn't he off for a bit after Mania?
I would think so. I mean, he wasn't on any of these, right? He wasn't at either of those shows, no. I would think, right?
I feel like he took time off. I'll look up quick how long he's gone. I thought he took time off to recover.
He probably did.
I feel like we heard that. I thought they said it like on a TNT or something that we watched.
He might have been recovering. I don't know if they just said that for the shits of it, but
right.
Let's see. The 11th, 1985.
Yeah, he's at Mania, and then...
Actually, what is...
Oh, no, he wrestles a little bit in April. No, he's still around. Okay, he's around for April.
Who... Wait, did... Wait a minute. Did... Sutton said Pittsburgh? Oh, he was doing the day of the taping. All right.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about. The day that this aired, they were in Landover.
Okay.
So they were... they when they taped it on the 10th that Friday, they were in Pittsburgh. When they aired it on the 11th that day, they were in Landover. And I'm looking at the... No, so
it doesn't look like Andre takes any time off. He's around.
Well, they actually wrestled three shows that day. They were in Landover, and that card was the same as the one you just mentioned. Winona Little Heart there, and Hogan Piper was actually the main event. Let's see. They were in Mr. Willie's backyard, the Dane County Expo Center in Madison, Wisconsin. No Andre there.
The Dane Cook Center.
The Dane Cook Center, yes, that's right. And then they were at that Katatsu Japan show with New Japan. Mass Superstar defeating Strong Machine number one. Snuka and Iron Mike. Jimmy Snuka and Iron Mike. Look at this match. Jimmy Snuka and Iron Mike Sharp defeated Tatsumi Fujinami and Siyunji Kosugi. Interesting. Snuka and Fujinami might be interesting. Here, no, Andre's here. He's in Japan.
Yeah, he's been around. I looked. He's pretty much. Yeah, but he's all over. He doesn't really miss any time.
No, it's Inoki, Seiji Sakaguchi, and Kengo Kimura fought Andre and the international tag team champions. Look at this, JR. Adonis and Murdoch to a double countout. So Andre was actually working heel in that match. Interesting.
Yeah, and then looking at the site, on May 24th, Andre fought Inoki to a double countout.
Okay, so he went overseas. He's probably making big. Yeah, it looks like he was on.
Oh no, he's all around the country too, though. He's everywhere.
Right, but in this stretch in May, he's in Japan. He's in Japan. But yeah, no, he probably didn't take any time off.
Also,
that's fine.
Looking at history of WWE, and May 24th, there was a show in Chicago, and the final three matches aired on AM Chicago with commentary from Oprah Winfrey and Jerry Valiant.
The fuck?
Ugh.
Listen to an audio broadcast of Oprah Winfrey calling wrestling.
There's footage of Oprah Winfrey calling a 14-minute Hulk Hogan Don Morocco match.
That's a radio station, right? You said AM?
No, that's like the morning. It's like, well, no, AM Chicago is probably like that morning. It's probably like the local Good Morning America kind of thing, or the Today Show. That's probably what it is.
Oh, I thought it was a radio station.
It was probably WGN.
Yeah, okay. It's probably the morning thing, like, you know, like Wake Up San Francisco that Danny Tanner did, that kind of thing. The last three matches. Jesse defeated Putski, Tito and JYD against I guess with the Future Dream Team, and then Hogan Morocco. Could you imagine, you know, Oprah talking about Jesse's tights or something? There's this little feather boa or whatever. Ridiculous. Stedman, give me a boa. So getting back to what we were saying, obviously, Andre didn't take quote time off, but I mean, they loaded the show up anyway. Where were we going to fit him? He wasn't gonna be able to fit in any of these matches anyway.
And you get a pin, and you get a pin.
Yeah, that's right.
Who gets a for you? Big boot for you.
What's the book of the month club?
And you get the job. All right. So we head backstage. It is time for our Mother's Day party hosted by Cyndi Lauper. With us backstage, where Mean Gene comes into interview, we have JYD and Bertha, Iron Sheik and Nikolai and Blassie, with a young woman that Blassie claims is his mother. Albano, Hogan, and Hogan's mom. Wendy Richter, Cyndi Lauper, and her mom. And Gene interviews them all. And that leads to some interesting comments and a poem from Milo Albano. Moolah then comes in and stirs up some shit, trashing Cyndi and her mom. And that leads to a big brawl that ends with Moolah and Gene getting shoved into the cake. I know it's a fine enough camp with good intentions. It wraps things up. Kind of starts a trend of holiday-themed episodes that we'll see. And, you know, best of all, it aired at like 12:55 a.m. So it's, you know, it's late in the night. It's not derailing the show. They kind of squeezed a little bit of camp in there. Tribute to Mother's Day, which was the next day. So, I mean, I thought it was all, like, as far as skits go, and you get Cyndi in there one more time, I thought it was pretty funny. You get Moolah embarrassed again. So I thought it was a fine way to end the show. Scott, what'd you think?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, it made Moolah look stupid, and you had some yuck-yucks at the end there with everybody, and heels tried to act heelish, faces acted baby face. It was fine. I don't think it was anything offensive about it. I thought it was, you know, good to end the show with some lighthearted comedy. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I liked it. Especially Freddie Blassie with his mother there. That was pretty good.
Yes, his mother, all right. Sugar Mama, maybe.
Full sedan.
So, yeah, no, I thought it worked out. I thought it worked out fine, and it was a good, you know, happy capper to the show. So there you go, our premiere, Saturday night's main event. JR, overall, I thought it was a huge success.
Agreed. And why don't we talk about our awards, and then we'll see just how much.
Oh yes, of course, our awards. My bad. That's right, our awards.
Awards match of the night. I went with Hogan and Orton.
I agree.
Pretty easy call. Yeah. Okay.
It was pretty easy.
Yeah, not much competition on this night. Worst match of the night, of course, I think just by default, or not even, was Richter and Moolah, which was fucking terrible.
Oh, it was bad. I mean, you can't even say, did the Duke have a better night than Moolah?
Oh, yeah, easily. He did his job. I mean, he did his job. Yeah. He put over the dog.
JYD, Richter match just wasn't
brutal.
Yeah.
MVP, I went with Roddy Piper. I thought he was the most compelling out there. I thought he did an awesome job with Orndorff, and he felt just like a compelling star that you had to listen to and see.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt either. I would give an honorable mention to Wendi Richter for doing her best to try to put some type of semblance to that pile of shit, but I'll go with Piper. That was pretty. He was pretty awesome. Whenever he's on camera, it's awesome.
Yeah, I had Piper and Orton, but definitely Piper for the promo that he cut, and just he was all over the place during the Orton Hogan match, just bouncing all over the ring.
Yes, yeah, and then that was a good when he punched Hogan in the face to bring out the fall. It was pretty funny too.
Yeah, he didn't get it. Just punches him from the outside.
All right, spoiler award, which is our worst worker of the night. I thought very easily went to the Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah, she was terrible. She was terrible.
Yeah, Moolah just. It's her. I mean, she'd win the women's title, 14 years from now also?
Oh, God. But at least that was booked as like a joke. Here, she's like a credible threat.
Yeah, she's like a legend. That was, yeah.
It was the pits. It was the pits.
Best moment, I went with Orndorff saving Hogan and Mr. T.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I would even say Mr. T coming in to save Hogan as well.
Oh, you could put post match of the world title out.
Yeah,
that whole thing.
Yeah, I think that whole part was good. Yeah, I thought the whole part was good too.
Definitely the best part when the crowd really comes unglued for Orndorff, actually, more than anyone.
Yeah, it really solidifies this turn. And then, last but not least, the Juice Award, which is our award, of course, for biggest steroids, known as the Mr. USA Award after Tony Atlas. And I went with Orndorff here, of course, as always, just juiced beyond belief, ripping out of his tiny shorts.
Yeah, God. Gave away a little too much there, Mr. Blunderful, as Jesse would say.
Jesse, you had him right.
Orndorff, I mean, it's kind of, he looked like he might have even been on an off cycle from like Mania, but an off cycle for him is still ridiculously juiced for most people.
Yeah, we have to rename this the Mr. Wonderful Award because now he's our first 2-time winner. So he's
that's right.
I'm going to rename it right now, Mr. Wonderful Award. Okay.
We'll probably change it because I'm sure in these house shows we're going to see some more.
Yeah, how about we'll name it after whoever like the first 2-time winner is, or and you know if we get someone that passes Orndorff, it'll become his award. So we'll do that. We'll change it as we go. And then overall grade, Scott, I went 5.5. You know, I thought it was a good offering. I think for what they aimed to do, it was really good. It was a nice snapshot of 85 and the weeks following the inaugural WrestleMania. There just wasn't enough in-ring action to make me grade this any higher. I'm not saying that was even the point, per se, but in a vacuum, you kind of need it. So, to me, the 5.5 is completely on the back of the presentation and the structuring and the booking of what they did. And then it would have just needed like at least one really big match, or we didn't really get a huge angle. We got some nice angle progression, but we didn't get a great angle or match to really kick this up a couple more tiers in the grading for me. So I went 5.5 out of 10.
I'll throw you a bone. I'll up it to 6 because I thought the presentation was really good. I thought the music was good. I thought Gorilla and Jesse were solid. I like the Mother's Day thing at the end kind of added a little levity to the show. We had a big face turn. Well, big, I guess, at that moment. We had the world champion on. They put all the pieces in place. They did as much wrestling as they could for 90 minutes. You had a pit, so you got Piper on. Again, the only real major stars at that moment that weren't on were Andre, Tito, and the Hammer.
Right.
Other than that, everybody was on. So I'll bump it up a half point from you. I'll give it a 6.
All right. And Ryan, what'd you have?
Yeah, I'd say right between 5.5, 6, because it was, you know, I think it was above average for what they're going for, but no real standout match that really pushes it too high. Although I will note that, unfortunately, on the network version, the debut of The Goonies Are Good Enough by Cyndi Lauper does not appear. if you haven't seen it, you really owe yourself the 8-minute music video on YouTube where it is just, it's basically the Goonies plot, but with Andre the Giant as Sloth instead of whoever the actor was.
Okay. That is interesting. Let's check that out.
Rocky Road?
Long time. All right, so that brings it in. Saturday's Main Event number 1 in the books. We'll be back next week, Scott. I believe we'll have a special guest with us then, hopefully, finally. It's been teased for a few times, but I think finally got him. We'll be looking at the May 20th house show, so just 9 days after Saturday's Main Event aired, and about 10 days after it was recorded, we'll return to Madison Square Garden for a big show, and that's the one that we hyped last week that features our big three matches, that Hogan-Morocco title rematch, the San Martino's in action, and then what was the other match? There were three big ones that were hyped.
The title match?
It was Hogan-Morocco. Oh, the tags.
The tags. Windham and Rotundo were getting their tag title shot back. Yep.
Okay, so three huge matches on that card. We'll check that out next week. So, Ryan, any closing thoughts?
No, good show. Good show to watch. Good show to be on. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you for doing a great
job.
You're welcome. Scott,
pleasure to be on.
Anything going on in your world this week we got to check out?
There was a main event this week.
Oh.
The main event will
be
this Wednesday.
These days.
I know, yeah. Back to back. Finally, it worked out. No, we're back with our regularly bi-weekly main event. Two guests on, and we'll talk about what's going on tonight on Raw. A little HBK action, and the Dead Man coming on at some point tonight, and some early predictions.
Who are the guests? Did you say for this one?
I did not. I can say them though. One of them, Core Four member Jordan Duncan, and making his return to the place to be. PlaceBNation.com for the first time in quite a while. Mr. Johnny Reckless making his return. He'll be joining. Jordan.
Hot news! I feel like we should be tweeting that out to PW Insider or something.
PW Insider. No, they'll charge me. So we'll talk about some early Rumble prognostications. Who might be in the lead, if you say, in terms of popular opinion, who's going to win, and what the title matches what could be shaping up with those two matches, and stuff like that. So just some early. Rumble stuff, and maybe look ahead to the weekend's UK tournament, which 2 hours, I found out, 2 hours on Saturday, 3 to 5, and 2 hours on Sunday, 3 to 5. I'm pretty sure that's how they're doing it. So I'm sure they're going to do the first round on, 16 guys, right?
Yeah.
So they'll probably do the first round on Saturday, 8 matches, and then they'll do the other 7, and then they'll do 7 matches on Sunday. My assumption. But I know after Raw tonight, they're doing a preview. So
there you go.
So we'll talk about that on Wednesday.
And you can also check out last week's Clotheslines and Headlines. I was not on. Mm-hmm. Glenn Butler was in the chair. But Chad Campbell was on, and they did a great recap of Wrestle Kingdom from last week, and they touched a great recapper, or kind of a primer as well on Lucha Underground, so check that out. And we'll be back next week. I'll be back for that show. We'll be talking the Rumble. We're going to have Brad Stutz on looking at CWF Mid-Atlantic, which is all the rage right now. And speaking of, our buddy Tim Buckner debuted his new show, We'll Do It Live, where he catches up with various members of Wrestling Twitter and PlayStation Nation that are going to live local shows. And he's going to talk about their experiences. So we had our buddy Johnny P on to talk about attending CWF Mid-Atlantic. So check that out. Getting a lot of great reviews out on Twitter and whatnot in our different levels of fandom. Our Vantage Point as well, a new podcast on our network. Be sure to check that out too. So subscribe to all of our feeds, Place to Be Podcast. Oh, I'm sorry, Place to Be Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Pop, Place to Be Nation Pop, I should say. Let me start again. Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only. Check out those feeds today for each and every show, as well as at PlaceToBeNation.com. If you're shopping on Amazon, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon can take you there and get a little money back our way as well to keep us up and running. Follow us on social media, Facebook, PlaceToBeNation, /PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, PlaceToBeNation, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. So check out everything. Rate us on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. Download all of our stuff, and we'll love you forever. Just like you, Ryan Everett, who will live forever as well. So hopefully we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks for joining us. Scott, we'll hear from you on Main Event with one unicorn on another unicorn. That is Johnny Reckless on Main Event.
That's right.
And then we'll be back next Monday night looking at that May 85 house show. Until then, we'll go.
You should have a Rich Dotson throwback jersey, Ryan.
I have my my Bo Jackson throwback.
Is it a Royals one?
No, it's not even really a throwback. It's the same jersey they have now. But...